This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Back the other way comes Shifley. Cross ice pass for Wheeler. He sprints in. Moves in. Let a shot go. He scores! Blake Wheeler will give the Winnipeg Jets their first lead of the night. A great pass by Shifley. 3-2 for the Jets. Hayes. Now for Shifley at center. Near side for Myers. Backhand shot to win the net. He scores! Tyler Myers will get the empty net goal. And Winnipeg will lead it 4-2. Horn sound. Tend. The Winnipeg Jets come from behind on home ice and defeat the Nashville Predators by a final score of 5-3.
It was billed as a playoff-type contest last night at Bell MTS Place, and the game lived up to its billing, the Winnipeg Jets defeating the Nashville Predators by a 5-3 margin last night to move back into top spot in the Central Division. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba, for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app. We say good morning, Universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuke. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We want to hear from you. The best way to do that is via Twitter. At Illegal Curve is how to reach us here in studio. We want your thoughts on last night's Jets victory over the Predators and what is upcoming, a very difficult 4-game road trip through the Eastern Conference. Anything to do with the Jets, anything to do with the NHL, reach us here in studio via Twitter at Illegal Curve. I say good morning to Ezzy. I say good morning to Dave. Last night, gentlemen, it was one of those games where both teams came in with a playoff mindset. The Jets fell behind 2-0, but they staged probably one of their best comebacks of the season to end up with the 5-3 victory.
Yeah, Drew, that was big boy hockey last night. That wasn't children's hockey. That was put on your big boy pants. This is a Central Division tilt. This is for first place in the division. And the Jets came out victorious. And as you mentioned, it was all about the comeback. And it looked like the Predators guys were in complete control of this game, even though the Jets had a fantastic second period, I thought. And the Predators obviously came on in the third period and they controlled the possession. They controlled the pace of play at times. But you got some really excellent goaltending from Lauren Brossoit and Connor Hellebuck. We expected to get the start. And Pekka Rinne was also very good in that game, even though there was a couple of empty netters scored in that game. I thought aside from the empty netters, the goaltending was really solid. And Rinne obviously didn't have a good second round last year against the Jets, but he won the Vezina. Why wouldn't we expect him to be a good goalie in that game? But you know, leading up to this game, guys, we know that the Jets were struggling. They'd lost 5 of their last 6 games. We know that there were three or four really, really disappointing losses, namely the one against the Minnesota Wild, because that's the most recent one. But you could throw in losses to Colorado and Minnesota and Ottawa in there. So
twice to Ottawa.
Right. And there was a lot riding on that game. It wasn't just first place. In my opinion, that's not really why this was an important win. It was because it was against the Nashville Predators, and it was because it was preceded by so many poor showings, I think. And so the fact that the Jets were down a couple of goals, and as Blake Wheeler talked about after the game, they stuck with the system, they didn't panic, and they got the job done, and they beat a really good Predators team. And that game could have gone either way, because right before Mark Scheifele makes it 3-2, there was a 2-on-1 the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me, Blake Wheeler makes it 3-on-2, not Mark Scheifele. So, you know, that easily could have been a Nashville Predators victory. So I think as far as the standings go, yes, sure, it's okay. You're in first place. But the Jets have 3 games in hand on the Predators. So really, it's kind of meaningless in that sense for me. I realize you want to be in first place in the division, but I think it's the significance of how they played that was the most important.
I think, Dave, that everybody sort of, when they were playing in that lull in February, when they were playing against, you know, non-playoff teams or weaker opponents, and they were playing poorly against those opponents, everybody was holding out hope that the trade deadline would come and go and March would hit and something would flip and the games would be more meaningful, the games would matter more, and the Jets would refocus. Now, it's only one game, and we saw, you know, last Friday against Vegas, they played well, and then they came back and laid an egg on Sunday in Arizona. It was only one game last night against the Predators, but the game resembled what the Jets want to do in terms of the game flow. Even though they were down 2-0, most people would say they had a lot of opportunities where that game wouldn't necessarily be 2-0. And Pekka-Rinne was big, earlier in the game to keep it 2-0. And then once the Jets got that goal to make it 2-1 on the power play, the dam sort of broke a little bit, and the Jets were able to obviously take the 3-2 lead eventually, but the game resembled what you want to see from the Jets entering the last month of the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as you know, we all know, one game doesn't make a season, of course. So, I mean, sometimes it goes in the positive, sometimes it goes in the negative. I thought that was a pretty good tilt last night. I thought the fans right from the outset were ready to go. It wasn't Nassau Coliseum on Thursday night, obviously, for the return of John Tavares. But
rivalry, not rage, was the feeling.
Right, but you know what? I actually thought like it was a really good. I mean, Friday night hockey, you know, a big rivalry game between the Nashville Predators and the Winnipeg Jets. And right from the opening puck, ahead of opening puck drop, ahead of the anthems, the fans were into it. They were chanting, "Go Jets, go." So you could feel like there was a lot of energy in the building. And obviously the teams were, I thought the Jets came out the right way. They played, you know, they played pretty well. And Pekka-Rinne is a very, you know, is a world-class goaltender. Mm-hmm. So he kept his team in it. And obviously Arvidsson gave the visitors a lead off that Jacob Trouba giveaway. But Jacob Trouba made up for it on the goal that ended up getting disallowed in the first period against the Jets.
There was no panic, to your point there, though, that Trouba with the terrible giveaway after Scheifele gave the puck away. So you have two of your best players giving the puck away, leading to a Nashville goal. Mm-hmm. And there was no real sag in the Jets game. The Jets tied it up, a minute later. It obviously didn't count because of the offside challenge. Right. But you saw the play seemed the same. They didn't get discombobulated as a result of giving up the early goal or goals to be down 2-0. They stayed with it and were able to eventually tie it up.
Yeah, and I think that they were, you had Adam Lowry and Brandon Tanev causing chaos, causing mm-hmm. some aggravation, and the Jets had some power play opportunities as a result of Nashville being a little bit undisciplined. So they had chances, and the power play was still, I thought, trying to be a little too cute. I think they were trying to make a few too many passes, not get some shots on net, and try and get some dirty stuff in front. But at the same time, like I said, I, to your point, Drew, I think the Jets looked pretty even, and they played fairly well in that first, played really well in the second, and I thought the opening of the third was pretty even. I thought both teams for the first probably 6 to 8 minutes were having their opportunities, but neither team really felt like it was dominating. And then of course the Jets got the goals, and Nashville was chasing at that point.
Dave, in the second period, before Matty Perreault takes that tripping penalty on P.K. Subban, and then P.K. Subban scores on the power play. Before that, it was all Jets. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to get into the Kevin Hayes, Kyle Connor, Nikolaj Ehlers line a little bit later as well. But
yeah, we'll talk about the forward lines and the deep pairings throughout the first hour of the program.
Right, but that line in the early second period was all over the Nashville Predators in their zone. And that was including the pair of Ryan Ellis and Roman Josi. So that line was excellent all night. Obviously, Kevin Hayes has his best game as a Jet. He's only had a couple games as a Jet. But that line was really solid. And I also really liked the fourth line. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about, Andrew Kopp, he's played on the fourth line before. Matty Perreault and Jack Roslovic have also played on the fourth line, but they've also been up on the second line as well. But I thought that line looked really good. And that was kind of the big topic heading into the game, was that Brian Little was moved to the wing, mm-hmm. and we weren't sure how that line was going to turn out. I thought that line actually struggled, whereas the fourth line looked really impressive, and they got some good shifts and some good zone time in that second period. So that really was the turning point in the game for me. P.K. Subban scores on the power play, and Matty Perreault takes a really tough tripping penalty in the offensive zone. That really could have been a turning point in the game coming the other way for the Predators, and the Jets managed to stick with it. Scheifele gets the big goal to get the ball rolling, and they really got rewarded, I thought, for the way they played early in the second period, later in the second.
I thought the Jets' physicality all game long was a significant factor. I mean, you mentioned the two big crushing body checks that Lowry and Tanev delivered to various members of the Predators, and then the retaliatory penalty that the Predators had.
What about Tyler Myers' hit on Matt Irwin?
Absolutely.
That was a big boy hit.
Especially Myers is a guy who doesn't usually use his physicality. He's big and he uses his size, but you don't necessarily think him as about crushing body checks. Going back to the last game in Nashville, where the Jets sort of manhandled the Predators, at Bridgestone Arena, where the physicality was a factor. I thought it was a factor again tonight. And that's, I think, an area that the Predators have not been able to handle the Jets this season. And maybe even going back to the playoff series last year, is the Jets' physicality throws Nashville off their game.
Well, and that's without Buff in the lineup, right?
Sure.
So there's no Dustin Byfuglien, who's one of the most physical players on the Jets. And, the Preds do have, The thing with, you know, the physical brand of hockey is you end up talking about the big hits and all that, but it's almost those smaller hits, the forechecks and all of that, that takes a toll as opposed to the bigger hits. We talk about it towards the end of the second period. Brandon Tanev and Adam Lowry both had big hits, but when you're talking about Brian Boyle, Wayne Simmonds, Colton Sissons, I mean, they have players that can throw their weight around. That's why they acquired a guy like Cody McLeod. Now, Cody McLeod probably won't play in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. He'll probably be the 13th or 14th forward. But if they want to insert a guy like McLeod into the lineup, they can.
If they just insert Cody McLeod into the playoffs, the other opponents are saying, thank you very much, no problem with that whatsoever. That's taking away from your lineup to put in a player who's very limited. But, I mean, you mentioned
Wayne Simmonds. Well, he wouldn't play a lot, right?
I know,
so the point is you have the option. Same thing with Matt Hendricks. Right, Matt Hendricks, I would argue, is a more versatile player, but Matt Hendricks is a guy that can throw his weight around. He'll stick up for his teammates. The point is, Drew, that the Predators have physical players.
If you want to
match up the two teams, you might say that the Jets are a more physical team, but it's not. I wouldn't say that the Predators are a pushover.
No, they're not a pushover.
And
the Jets,
and they're missing Austin Watson.
Sure, of course.
He's a physical presence.
Yeah, obviously. He absolutely is, and that was part of the reason why they went out and got a guy like Brian Boyle, and the physicality side of things is part of the reason why they went out and got Wayne Simmonds. But with their
Wayne Simmonds was less than pleased with Brandon Tanev yesterday.
Well,
if you saw him on the bench,
Wayne Simmonds is, you know, is certainly not the player he once was, and that's not, you know, that's not a criticism necessarily. It's just the reality of a guy.
I think Jets fans are very happy they got Kevin Hayes and not Wayne Simmonds.
Certainly Kevin Hayes was more impactful last night than Wayne Simmonds was.
You're talking about apples and oranges, boys.
Of course. You're talking about different players, but I mean, those are all names. I mean, the Jets apparently right up till Nashville acquired him thought that they had a good chance to get Wayne Simmonds again, if you believe, you know, the aftermath of the trade deadline.
Simmonds is a very solid hockey player.
He is a very solid hockey player.
And as far as saying, you know, he's not what he once was, you could say that about anybody who's 30 years old.
I would. I mean, he's certainly not what he once was, but my point is that with their regular 12 forwards and the regular defense and the Predators' regular forwards and the regular defense, the Jets' physicality is a factor that Nashville has not been able to match up with, in my opinion. And you saw it last night at times in the game. It wasn't the determining factor in the game last night, but I thought that the Jets' physical play did throw Nashville a little bit off their game. And the Jets, and when you're down 2-0 to a team like Nashville, and you're a team that doesn't have a lot of confidence right now, staging that comeback that they did. I mean, you saw Blake Wheeler, and we'll hear from Blake Wheeler momentarily here, Shawnee, if you want to get that ready. But you saw Blake Wheeler with the emotion. I mean, when he scored that 3-2 goal, his celebration was intense.
When Lauren Brossoit made those saves in the second period, I think he made 5 saves. It was at least 4 saves on Ryan Johansson. Blake Wheeler came up to him and gave him the old headbutt.
Yeah, you don't see that sort of in-game celebration almost of a goaltender's save very often to that extent. You know, sometimes the guys come back and they give a stick tap to the goalie for making a couple saves. Wheeler, you know, took his, you know, Brossoit's head in his hands and basically gave him, you know, a headbutt and a kiss and the whole 9 yards.
Considering how good those saves were, I mean, it was probably worthwhile because, I mean, I thought for sure those were goals, and all of a sudden it was like pad, 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 pad.
Yeah.
Okay, Lauren Brossoit is on his game.
Yeah, Lauren Brossoit had a good bounce back effort last night.
Yeah,
That wasn't, you know, he had struggled a little bit. Was he 0-3-1 in his last 4 games?
Yeah.
Comes back, good performance on home ice in an unexpected situation. You know, Connor Hellebuck home with the flu. So you go to Brossoit, and it worked out well for the Jets. And we mentioned Blake Wheeler had a lot of emotion. Here's what Blake Wheeler had to say post-game last night.
It just hasn't been easy for us, you know, and I think Nashville brings out the best in us. They bring that level of excitement because you can't take any time off against that team. 30 seconds, one shift, 5 minutes, you know, even if you're up 3 or 4 goals, you know, they come back on teams. You just can't take your foot off the gas. And I think that'd be the greatest compliment you can give a team is that they're never out of it. And I think that's a really good team for us to play right now. You know, we got to play 60 minutes to win that game.
All I can tell you is that if the Jets and the Predators meet each other again in the playoffs, it's what every hockey fan wants. I mean, you watch that game, the Predators, you know, came back, even when it was 4-2 and you thought that, okay, game over, the Jets had scored their first empty net goal, boom, the Predators score again 4-3. And you're wondering, are the Jets going to blow it again like they did against Minnesota on Tuesday night? That's good hockey last night.
It's good hockey, and it's a very real rivalry, right? These two teams do not like each other. I don't want to say they hate each other, because hate is such a strong term. I mean,
Hockey hate.
It's hockey hate. They don't actually hate each other. I mean, these guys have respect for each other. They don't like each other because they know that they have to go through the other team to get to the Western Conference Final, to get to the Stanley Cup Final. So this, I've said this before, this is the best rivalry in hockey. Maybe Boston and Toronto is comparable, but as far as I'm concerned, the Jets and Nashville is the best rivalry because I think these are still the two best teams in the league. I realize Tampa has the best record, but I personally still think these two are the best.
When we come back, we talk about the Jets' defensive pairings without Josh Morrissey in the lineup. He's going to be out at least until April. We talk about how the Jets are going to handle that and how the D pairings looked last night. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Just got to play my game. You know, obviously this team's widely respected around the league, where you know how dominant they are and how powerful they are. So you know, I think it's a good fit for me to play fast and you know, physical. So I think it's you know, I think I'll fit in real nice here.
Jets defenseman Eric Lindros, Nathan Beaulieu wearing number 88, like Eric Lindros used to do back in the day. That was him addressing the media after he was traded to Winnipeg and he arrived in town. I think that was before Tuesday's game against the Minnesota Wild. Talk about from the frying pan to the fire. He goes from being a healthy scratch more often than not in Buffalo to playing top pairing left side defense for the Winnipeg Jets after Josh Morrissey was injured last Sunday in Arizona. Morrissey, of course, out of the lineup at least until the beginning of April. That's when his quote-unquote window will open to return. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Okay, Drew, you brought up Eric Lindros, of course, who wore number 88, Nathan Beaulieu wearing number 88. What number did Brett Lindros wear?
Sorry, I got nothing.
75.
Oh, there you go. I'm impressed that you're able to pull that out of the recesses of your mind.
For the Islanders.
Yeah. I know, I remember who he played for.
Yeah.
But I don't remember what jersey number he wore. So good on you there, Mr. Ginsberg, for that pointless trivia early this morning. Let's talk about the Jets' defense without Josh Morrissey. I mean, we saw it happen on Sunday in Arizona, and everybody said immediately, uh-oh, that looks like a long-term injury. Anytime a player gets hit, grabs a shoulder, drops the stick, and it skates directly to the dressing room.
And not just any player. I mean, Josh Morrissey is not a player who gets hurt and stays hurt. He usually is back in the lineup like immediately thereafter, so...
Yes.
When you saw that reaction, you knew it wasn't good.
You knew it wasn't good. So the Jets, obviously, we know what happened at the trade deadline. They went out and acquired a couple of different defensemen, Beaulieu being the biggest name of them all, I suppose, all due respect to Bogdan Kiselevich, who we haven't seen yet play a game here in Winnipeg, as he's sort of nursing an injury, I believe.
It's illness.
Illness? Okay, that's what Paul Maurice had to say, so who knows when he's going to get into the lineup.
But malaise.
Your thoughts on, I guess your thoughts primarily on Beaulieu so far and how he's played with Jacob Trouba. I mean, he hasn't been spectacular by any stretch, but I don't think the Jets need him to be spectacular. They're looking for a guy who can be solid and consistent, I think.
Yeah, and Drew, I have to give you credit. You know how much that sickens me, but when we were doing our trade deadline show, you asked us where we thought Nathan Beaulieu was going to play, and you know, I said there's no way he's going to play on the top pair. They're going to ease him into the lineup either on the second pair or the third pair, and there he is on the top pair, and I actually, you know, disagree a little bit. I actually think he's looked really solid. I you know, he's not going to play on the power play. He's not going to play on the penalty kill, or at the very least, he hasn't yet in his first two games with the Jets. But, you know, he's looked very solid. This is a guy who we know just wanted to play, right? He wasn't playing in Buffalo, and there were other defensemen ahead of him. We know the two Rasmuses and Bogosian and Scandella. But Nathan Beaulieu, to me, has always been a very solid, serviceable defenseman. He can skate. I mean, this is a former first-round pick that Chevy has said that they were even looking at in the first round. So, I mean, this isn't a guy that's ever going to be mistaken, you know, for Charlie McAvoy or Brent Burns as a stud offensive defenseman. But this is a guy that can throw his weight around. We saw him have a really nice block shot last night, and he actually had a really good scoring chance in the game previous to that against Minnesota. So I actually think he's looked really good, you know, playing 17 or 18 minutes. And you know, for Paul Maurice, that's what they need right now. They need someone just to steady the ship as Josh Morrissey's going to be out of the lineup, as you mentioned, for the next month or so. So to have a guy like Nathan Beaulieu who you can put into the lineup, that's not easy, guys. And this is a veteran defenseman. What is he, 26, 27 years old? He's played a lot of games with the Montreal Canadiens and Buffalo Sabres, maybe not so much this year, but I am really impressed with what he's done. And again, you know, this isn't a guy who you're necessarily going to, you know, back up the truck and give him a 5-year contract, but the way he's played, you wonder if this isn't a guy that you might sign in the offseason, because I think he's been very serviceable, as I mentioned, and he's a guy who can throw the weight around. He's not the biggest guy, but, you know, he plays, I think, pretty big. So
he's an RFA at season's end. So, I mean, the Jets would have to qualify him at probably a little bit, they'd have to qualify him over $2.5 million a year. Now, I mean, obviously that's a topic of conversation for the summer, and who knows how he plays over the next 15, 20 games and into a playoff run.
And it's a small sample size, but when you go into the lineup, guys, against two division rivals, I thought he played really good against the Wild, and I thought he played really well last night. So, you know, small sample size, yes, but in those two games, he's looked very solid, and he hasn't looked out of place at all.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree, Ezzy. I think that he's been a pretty, I mean, you can't ask for a player to have a tougher situation than to replace Josh Morrissey, one of the top pairing defensemen on this Jets team. So
in the NHL, I mean, Josh Morrissey is a clear cut left side. I mean, if you know, we sort of did the exercise a little bit earlier in the season, you know, where does Josh Morrissey rank among, you know, maybe not offensively necessarily entirely, but sort of all around top pairing left side defensemen in the NHL. And he's up there.
He's at the very least a top 20 defenseman in the league.
Yes.
Maybe even top 10.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, that's the whole point, right? You guys are making it. So the fact is that you got a guy who's expected to come in and replace that one, a guy who is absolutely beyond reliable for this Jets team. And, yeah, I mean, like as he just said, it's not a big sample. You've only had two games with him. But I thought he's been serviceable. I think you've asked him. He's done what you've asked him to do. I don't think he's been burnt too badly on any plays. There's nothing that stands out in my mind having watched the last two games at Bell MTS Place and thought, well, he was, you know, he made an egregious error there. Although egregious was the word of the day yesterday for Jacob Trouba's mistake.
Yeah, so the turnover that led to the first Predators goal, the consensus among the press box wags.
Well, Dave, you're gregarious, so.
It was that egregious was the descriptive term?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So no, I think he's been a pretty good addition. And again, they're you know, look, they clearly want to have the depth. That's the whole point of this team. And we've seen, look, you need this in the playoffs and you're getting an experience. We've seen this with the Jets before where they go, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 deep into the moose when they need defensemen. So having guys that can be thrown into the lineup and be relied upon is a good thing because you're not always going to be healthy, whether it's the regular season or the playoffs.
You know, I thought last night, I mean, you know, credit where it's due, because we often criticize him. Dmitry Kulikov, I thought, was good last night. One of his better games as of late for the Jets, because he's had some significant struggles this season, I think would be the nicest way to describe a lot of the decision-making and some of the plays that Kulikov has made this year. But last night, I thought he was steady. I thought he was solid for the Jets. Certainly not flashy. He's never going to be flashy. And I know plus-minus isn't a great stat to use, but he was a +3 last night for the Jets. So that was a good performance. That was good Dmitry Kulikov. Remember, it was good. There was good Buff and bad Buff. That was good Dmitry Kulikov for the Jets last night. And Sami Niku isn't getting talked about a lot, but for a guy really in his rookie season in the NHL, he played that one game last year, as you remember, in Montreal. He stepped in and he seems to be getting more comfortable game by game, I think, on the Jets blue line.
Yeah, that's the key, right? Because Sami Niku's playing on the right side, and he has played on the right side for the Moose, but he's also a natural left shot defenseman.
Right.
And
but he does prefer the right side.
He does prefer the right side, and that allows Ben Chiarot to stay on his strong side. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. I think that pairing together has looked better. And you wonder if that's going to be an option when the Jets are completely healthy, if that could be an option, even though it's very tough, right? Because Tyler Myers gets elevated when Buff is out of the lineup, right? Mm-hmm. So when Buff comes back to the lineup, he's the second pair defenseman. Myers is the third pair defenseman. So where does that leave Sami Niku, right? We've talked about this before. Is Sami Niku going to be your seventh or eighth defenseman alongside probably Nathan Beaulieu? Or are you going to have him as your top pairing defenseman for the Moose when you're healthy, right? And I think Sami Niku has done enough with the Jets to remain with them when Buff is back, when Josh Morrissey's back, when Joe Morrow is back. But these are all good problems to have, guys. When you can beat the Nashville Predators, who, by the way, are completely healthy, I mean, they have no significant injuries.
The only absence from their lineup is Austin Watson, right. But that's got the asterisk next to it due to the
right.
He's in the substance abuse program.
Yeah,
the NHL.
And we don't expect him to come back anytime soon. That's why correct. I didn't include him. But right. Austin Watson is a good, solid, you know, player. But when you're talking about your top players, right? Victor Arvidsson, PK Subban, those guys were injured earlier in the season. Kyle Turris was injured earlier in the season. So when you're able to beat the Preds at full health without your top two defensemen. Mm-hmm. And Morrissey and Buff are the Jets' top two defensemen, and you're able to plug in Nathan Beaulieu, Sammy Niku. I agree with you, Drew. I think Sammy Niku has looked a lot more confident, and he's, you know, moving the puck a little bit more. You know, he's not getting the power play time, but he's getting a little bit more ice time, you know, playing 13, 14 minutes. I think he was around 14 minutes.
He's not
minutes.
Afraid to jump into the play. You see it right. in the last couple games. There's been an opportunity for him to gain the blue line, the opposing team's blue line. He's not afraid to go after it anymore, as the game is slowing down for him like it does for any young player, Dave.
Yeah, and worth noting, Sammy Niku was not assigned to the Moose ahead of the AHL playoff deadline, so he will not be on the Moose playoff roster.
He's ineligible to play for the Moose if they make the playoffs.
If they make the playoffs, so he will be with the Jets, whether it's, you know,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And that just, well, you know, it's not a surprise, as because everything was happening on trade deadline. Mm-hmm. It was so crazy. But the Jets had assigned Tucker Pullman and Mason Appleton, and we weren't sure if that was going to be a paper transaction just to make them eligible for the playoffs, or if that was an actual physical transaction. Obviously, turned out to be a physical transaction.
It's important to remember that there are no roster limits anymore right. in the NHL. You only have to be salary cap compliant until the playoffs, and then when the playoffs start, there's no salary cap anymore. Right. But right now, there's no 23-man roster. You can have as many players up with the team as you want, as long as you remain salary cap compliant.
Right, and you know, back to what we were talking about before with the depth, now that I know that Sammy Niku is for sure going to be with the Jets, Dave, I mean, that just gives you more options. When the Jets are healthy, when Buff's back, when Morrissey's back, you know, if you want another option for your third pair, for example, right? Mm-hmm. If Dmitry Kulikov is struggling, even though Sammy Niku prefers to play on the right side, you know, you have the ability, if Niku is your seventh, eighth defenseman, you have the ability in the playoffs, whether it's against Colorado, Minnesota, Nashville in the second round or later in the playoffs, you have the ability to put in a guy like Niku on the third pair. He's a very dynamic player, and I think it just gives you more options that you didn't have last year, because Niku wasn't a guy that was up with the Jets in the playoffs. And even though Joe Morrow, I think, did a very admirable job kind of being that seventh defenseman for the Jets, I think now you're going to have Joe Morrow and you're going to have Sammy Niku and Beaulieu. So the Jets have a lot of options, and I think Chevy really needs to be commended for all of those moves he made at the trade deadline. Yes, some of them were minor, but Beaulieu is turning out to be a really nice acquisition, maybe just as big as Kevin Hayes when you consider all the injuries.
Well, think about the Jets situation quickly. I mean, think about the Jets situation if Morrissey gets injured against Minnesota after the trade deadline,
right.
as opposed to Sunday before the trade deadline. Now you'd be, oh boy, would they be
You'd have to be thinking about that regardless.
Of course. You would think that he probably would have acquired maybe one left-side defenseman.
Not two, probably, but you're right.
You're right.
I think he would have.
And I think Beaulieu was always sort of talked about as a potential option, but who knows? For the Jets, I guess, fortunate, quote-unquote, that the injury happened prior to the trade deadline as opposed to after. When we come back, Murat Atesh is going to join us from TheAthletic.com. You know him from his great Jets work. More Jets talk to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
25 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're with you here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuke. You can, of course, follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Big win for the Moose last night, Dave. We've talked about the Jets victory all morning long so far. Big win for the Moose last night in Belleville against the Senators following Wednesday's victory against the Marlies in Toronto.
Yep, and they were that's a Belleville team that's 11-0-0-4. So they haven't lost a lot of games, and the Moose were down 2-0 and came back, or up 2-0 and then managed to hold on. And I think Mikael Burden wasn't expecting to start, but obviously Eric Comrie got called up, and then you ended up having him having to stop a penalty shot on his birthday in overtime. And then Seth Griffith, who's been phenomenal, has 4 goals in his last 2 games, scored the game winner to give the Moose a much needed victory.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TheAthletic.com here in Winnipeg, he covers the Winnipeg Jets, a good friend of ours. Murat Attash joins us on the program. Murat, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Nope. Murat, are you there?
I am, yeah. Hello.
Hi, can you hear us?
Yeah, well, it sounds pretty good here.
There you go. Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Doing very well, Murat. Obviously, you spent most of the last 35 or so minutes talking about the Winnipeg Jets and last night's victory over the Nashville Predators in a key Central Division matchup. You know, regardless of the outcome of last night's game, like, take the score out of the game as much as possible, what I think was impressive to us, or what was most identifiable to us here in the studio, was the Jets' game resembled what they want their game to look like. From your perspective, how do you think last night played out for the Jets?
Yeah, I see it largely the same way. I think one of the things that's been missing from Winnipeg's play lately has been forwards that are back-checking just as hard as they need to make Winnipeg's aggressive hard gap system work. Winnipeg's D, when they're trying to prevent entries against opposing teams as good as Nashville, they really need to see at least one forward coming back high to take the opposition's third guy, so they're not looking at odd man rushes. If they get that, they can be a little bit more aggressive at the line. They can even be all the way more aggressive in the offensive zone, as long as they've got that puck support coming back. For the last two games, actually, I'm going to say Winnipeg's forwards have stepped up in a big way, and that's the system that they're aiming for. Absolutely, they are. It still led to a lot of quality chances against, but most of that stuff, to my mind, happened in Winnipeg's end. There was that Trouba giveaway. There are moments still, and I think they're going to continue to be with the injuries as they are. But as a total team effort, I would say it was closer to the Winnipeg Jets hockey that you'd really look for at this time of year.
Rod, I think you're going to have some strong opinions for my next question, but what did you think of the new look lines? Brian Little playing on the right wing with Tanev and Lowry, and then what did you think of that fourth line with Matty Perreault and then Andrew Kopp in the middle and then Jack Roslovic on the wing?
You know what? I'm a big fan of the current line setup, absolutely. I think Paul Maurice is in a good situation where there aren't too many ways that you can put those 12 forwards together and not have it work out somehow. The team is that deep up front right now. I think that one of the biggest stories of the game, and Paul Maurice alluded to this as well after the game, was that, you know, Winnipeg didn't necessarily dominate the first line battle last night or the second line battle, but by the time that you got to the fourth line of Kopp with Perreault and Roslovic against Nashville's fourth line, they were getting zone time. They were getting a lot of chances. Roslovic had a really good game in terms of back pressure and winning pucks and turning it back the other way. And that's going to be an advantage and a definite strength for Winnipeg for the next little while. I mean, their lines appear to have some chemistry, and even if Scheifele's line doesn't dominate, well, you can make that pass and then send Wheeler in on the rush. And then the deeper you go down the lineup, the more likely it is that Winnipeg overpowers other teams. And as long as they're being committed to that two-way game and coming back, and, you know, every line has at least one person reasonably responsible in that way right now, it's a good look for the forwards, absolutely. And I think clearly, especially with the injuries, which I keep coming back to on defense with Morrissey and Buffalo and others, you know, that's going to be really critical in terms of Winnipeg going forward. And I also think that Kevin Hayes is a very good ad. Talked about that a lot at The Athletic this week.
Well, you know, Murat, the one thing that Coach Maurice seems loath to do is break up Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. Do you ever see a time in this season that he goes and breaks up that pairing?
You know, we got it for a few minutes during some of those struggles. I think it was against Colorado, the really brutal loss that came out not too long ago. And it was just for a few minutes, and it's not something that I can recall seeing the start a period or start a game or anything to that effect while both players were healthy. I think that's just the two-player combination. Even when fans ask, you know, how would I put together the lines, I always assume that's just one of Paul Maurice's rules, that those two guys are joined together. Winnipeg has so many good forwards that you don't have to do that, right? If you ever wanted to look back at a little Wheeler combination that used to dominate as much as they did, or, you know, use Scheifele skills to complement other players in different ways, I'm sure you could in Winnipeg without there being dire consequences. And if we had a couple of looks at that earlier in this year, you know, it might give Paul Maurice more flexibility now to have a little bit more knowledge there. At the same time, I mean, you know, coaches go through a million decisions in any given day, and if that's one he doesn't have to make, it clearly seems to feel good for the team to do it that way.
Murat Attash is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Murat from his work on theathletic.com covering the Jets. And Murat, you mentioned you spent a lot of the week talking about the addition of Kevin Hayes to the Winnipeg Jets lineup. Obviously a good performance last night for him. 1 goal, 2 assists for 3 points in only a second game in a Jets uniform. It seems like it's been a pretty seamless fit so far, obviously a small sample size. But why do you think that the Jets targeted Kevin Hayes as their trade deadline addition? And why do you think he's a good fit for this Jets team?
Well, part of the reason that Kevin Hayes would have been targeted was because he's not coming in at that Mark Stone or Matt Duchene price. I'll definitely think that in terms of what kind of value you can get for, you know, the first round pick and players that you give up, I think Winnipeg did well with a first and Brendan Lemieux and a conditional pick for Kevin Hayes. I think that late first isn't a huge bet, even though players turn out from that angle. If you look at just the math of it, it's less than 50% to be a top six type player from that part of the first round. And Brendan Lemieux, I really think there's an NHL player there, but I don't see him too far high up the lineup. So in terms of cost, you can get Kevin Hayes for prices you can't for Duchene or Stone. But the real reason I think that he fits so well is that he has developed a 200-foot game. He is a player that you can trust to come back hard and be one of those be the first forward back, I should say. He's got the size to play in his own zone. And over the last few years, he's really focused on sort of stepping up his play in his own zone. So now that playmaking in the offensive zone, which we started to see some really nice passes, he can put it together in all three areas. And I think that's what Winnipeg needed the most. That second line center who can affect not only where the game gets played in terms of driving play, but he has enough offense so that when he gets there, you know, he can make those plays, set people up. And, you know, the 3 points might be flattering because two of them went into empty nets, but we've seen a lot of chances off of Kevin Hayes' stick so far, even in his first game. A real nice setup pass for Brandon Tanev on the breakaway and so many more. He got a real nice cycle play with Nick Ehlers off the faceoff, and he fires it across to Kyle Connor in front yesterday. That one doesn't go in. But you can just tell that there's some danger there. And even with two young guys like Connor and Ehlers, he's able to play in the right area of the ice. And that's a really meaningful addition for Winnipeg.
Right. Last segment, we were talking about Sammy Niku, and we all agreed that he seems to just be getting better and better as the season progresses. And even though, as you talked about earlier, when Dustin Byfuglien and Josh Morrissey come back into the lineup, Sammy Niku might be pushed into that number 7 or number 8 defenseman role out of the lineup. But how have you seen specifically Sammy Niku's game grow? Because as we mentioned, it just looks like, you know, he's getting more and more comfortable with the puck and away from it.
Yeah, you know, Sammy Niku is a player that I'm pretty high on, and I'm pretty, a lot of the deep divey sort of stuff says that guys who have done what he's done at his age go on to really good NHL careers. So I'm really looking, you know, that's my perspective. I'm kind of looking for good things from him. But early in the season, just a few minutes here or there, it wasn't quite there. And then all of a sudden lately, when you watch them, his quick turns in his own zone, his first pass, you know, amongst Winnipeg's healthy D, I'm going to rate on that left side his first pass and his skating better than anyone that they have right now. I mean, you're still going to look for some trouble when he's trying to handle big guys one-on-one and certain things in his own zone as he's figuring them out. But in terms of simply not having to be in his own zone, I think that he's one of the best that Winnipeg has right now already. And that's going to be an interesting thing for me. I think that there's a strong argument that unless Kiselevich comes in and cleans things up terrifically, or there's a strong argument in my mind that Sammy Niku is worth that roster spot, even with a full-fledged top six. And, you know, he's getting a little bit more confidence. You can see all the time he's trying more plays at the offensive line. He's moving the puck up quickly. It's very clear to me that there's a player there and will be a good player there as well. At the same time, you know, if you have a Morrissey and you run Chiarot and Beaulieu, maybe Sammy Niku comes out of that lineup. That's another situation. I'll close off this thought just by saying, if we had had a real nice long look at Sammy Niku early in this season, while those injuries had hit in the earlier part of the season, we might have more information about him now and maybe more confidence, even though we're seeing already. That we might have seen him in that top six role, even with the healthy lineup. I don't think we'll get him in there in the playoffs just because of a preference for veterans, but I like what I've seen from him.
Murat, we tend to value a player based on goals and assists and what they're, you know, showing up on the score sheet. So Patrick Laine has 4 goals, 2 assists in his last 5 games. But, you know, Paul Maurice has talked about his 5-on-5 game and how it's, he's seen an improvement in it away from the goals and what he's been able to do. Have you seen an improvement in the play of Patrick Laine, especially since he's joined Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler?
Yes. Hard yes. Full yes. I don't. You know, because a bit of a math nerd on my part, you know, when Patrick Laine shoots 4% or less for a couple of months, you know, I don't really worry that he's never going to score again. I think it's coming back. But in the last few games, you've started to see Patrick Laine, there have been some shifts I've just highlighted where his man-to-man coverage has been just perfect. No longer sitting at the top of the circle, kind of looking a little bit lost. He's following his man all the way, staying beneath his man, between him and the net, all the way down to the goal line, breaking pucks up with his stick, using his size and actually winning the puck. He has a kind of fun hitting style where he turns his body and almost hits people with his back, and he doesn't always come up with the puck when he does that. But in his defensive zone lately, there have been at least a few shifts where you look at him and you're just watching him track somebody one-on-one, not losing him no matter what happens, and then winning the puck and going the other way. That is a look that if we see from Patrick Laine consistently moving forward is going to turn him into not just a guy who scores, but a guy who controls where the puck gets, where the play happens as well. It's too soon to say that that's who he is for his life, but in the last little while, I definitely see that as something that he can grow into.
And Murat, just quickly, do you think that's a function of playing with Wheeler and Scheifele and there's an expectation you're on the top line and you have to step up your game if you want to stay with these guys?
There could be something to that for sure. I think that those are the two most intense guys, and you probably hear it from them on the bench if you're missing or going slowly, or even just in terms of a little bit of reverence. Like you heard Laurent Brossoit yesterday say that Blake Wheeler's a guy that he admires to, and he's accomplished so much as a leader in this league. There's guys that you look up to, and I think that that would be a realistic thing to suggest, is that Laine really wants to make that happen on the top line. I don't know. I'm not in his head, but I think definitely that there's a chance that that's true. And especially with that role, I mean, if a player wants to stay on that top line and keep getting those big minutes, they're not hiding him. He's still part of that trio, oftentimes late in games in the last little while too. So, it's a big step for him. And, if that leadership angle is why it is, then I'd say that's really meaningful and another reason why a guy like Blake Wheeler or a guy like Mark Scheifele has value.
Murat Ateş covers the Winnipeg Jets for TheAthletic.com. Murat, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me. I love it, guys.
Take care, Murat. When we come back, we discuss the Jets' forward lines. How do we think about Brian Little as a winger, Andrew Kopp as a centerman, and the role of that line last night, or the role of those lines last night in defeating the Nashville Predators? Much more Jets talk to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
You know, something that works lately and trying to find the right combinations that... going to wing was definitely a possibility, and he told me right away. For me, you know, it's not a huge change. I think I played a bit in the playoffs with those two on the wing last year, so yeah, it's different, but it's something I don't mind doing.
Winnipeg Jets right winger Brian Little. I'm Ron Burgundy. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve and home of the Illegal Curve sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For freshly made and fresh frozen foods delivered right to your door, visit shopbernsteins.com or check them out in person. They're in the Cordon Village Mall on the corner of Cordon and Lanark. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. So the Jets, we'd heard it maybe rumored. I did not necessarily expect it to happen or happen this quickly, but obviously Paul Maurice prefers Brian Little as a right winger and Andrew Kopp in that center ice position. He broke up the Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp line last night, putting Little with Tanev and Lowry. Andrew Kopp centers the line with Jack Roslovic and Matthew Perreault. How did you think the Jets forward lines performed last night, particularly that sort of bottom six of those two lines where there was the majority of the line shuffling?
Right. And, you know, we just talked to Murat about the game yesterday, and, you know, the first line was not dominant, even though, you know, Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler had a big impact on the score sheet mm-hmm. and the outcome of the game, especially earlier on in the game. It was clearly, I thought, Kevin Hayes, Kyle Connor, and Nikolai Ehlers that looked like the Jets' most dangerous line. And, yeah. You know, we've talked about this many times before, and I agree with you, Drew, and I have agreed with you before. The TLC line to me is so effective. You know, it's the old axiom, right? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Mm-hmm. And that line has been
As I find out what an axiom is, I'll agree with you or not. Right.
No, but
you pulling out axiom.
No, but the no big deal. I have a journalism diploma. But when you talk about, you know, the that line and how dominant they are possession wise and what they can do to drive play, right? They can hem other teams in their zone. They can score goals. Brandon Tanev is having his best NHL career. Adam Lowry, I thought, had a really good game, not just his body checks yesterday, but I thought he was really engaged. And we know that he's been so good in the faceoff circle this year. But Drew, when you talk about that line, Brian Little's played center the majority of his career, but the majority of this season. Now, Kevin Hayes enters the lineup. Mm-hmm. So that was the big question that we were talking about on Monday, and it wasn't just us. Everybody's talking about, okay, if Kevin Hayes is your second line center, is Brian Little your third line center? Is he going to move to wing? Because when Paul Stastny joined the Jets last year, Brian Little moved to the wing. So
I
it's
always
a similar,
thought that was injury related, though. I mean, well, remember it, back
it,
to
it,
last
it
year?
It was partly because he had the injury, and that
thumb
was preventing
injury.
Him. Yeah. So you have to assume that it's now not anything to do with an injury, because we haven't been told otherwise. It has everything to do with, you know, where these players fit into the lines now that you've brought in Kevin Hayes. Because Brian Little's not going to now move, you know, off the roster. I mean, you either bump him down to the third line or the fourth line. And Brian Little, to me, just can't be on your fourth line. He has to be playing more than 9, 10, 11 minutes a game. So based on one game, I mean, I can't say that I was overwhelmingly impressed by that line. I thought they were decent, and you saw them, you know, throw some big body checks, and you I think Brian Little might have had a shot on net. I'm not sure if he did have a shot on net, but obviously
he had one shot on goal last night.
Right, but obviously, you know, no points for that
Tanev
line.
And Lowry had no shots on goal last night, for the record.
Right, so, I mean, the line looked okay. I guess I would leave it at that, Dave. I wouldn't say that, you know, it was the Jets' best line, because as I mentioned, the Kevin Hayes line, and I actually thought the fourth line was really solid for the Jets with Perreault and Kopp and Roslovic. So we'll see what happens here, but you got to think that Paul Maurice is going to stick with this for the time being, because as far as the Jets forward group goes, they're healthy, mm-hmm. right? I mean, there's no injuries here, so this is now the time to do it. With 18 games left in the season, or 17 games left in the season, whatever it is here, you want to definitely try Little on the wing leading up to the playoffs. You don't want to leave it until the last couple of games of the season or early in the playoffs, but as it stands right now, to give you, you know, a short answer, even though it was long-winded, mm-hmm. I would prefer to see Little at his natural center position, and I would like to see the TLC line stick together. But again, Paul Maurice is the one that makes the decisions, and not me. But as it stands now, it looks like Little's going to see some time on the wing.
And I think you hit it on the head, Ez. I think the reality is that this is just Paul Maurice trying to get a veteran player used to playing a position he's not used to, he doesn't traditionally play. Get him playing with those guys. You can afford to do it now. I mean, but you don't really have a lot of time, because the whole point is, and we're talking about the idea of, you know, now that the trade deadline is over, the season ramps up and teams start to really change their focus. So if you're going to have Brian Little on the wing, you're not all of a sudden going to decide, well, you know, now we're going to put him back to center. So if this is what you're going to go with, this is what you're going to go with. Now, I kind of think along your lines, I would think you would stick that TLC line as a true fourth line, probably one of the best fourth lines in the league. And you have Little playing with Roslovic and Perreault.
Yep.
And that's, to me, is a third line that can give you minutes and can get you some goals and can really, like, do some things for you. So to me, you'd have an effective three, you know, top lines, or top nine. Mm-hmm. And then you have a fourth line that if they score, they score. But really, that's more of a shutdown.
They're going to,
you
know, dominate possession-wise.
That's right. So that would be more my inclination. Of course, I'm not the coach, so I don't make those decisions. But, you know, I mean, like Brian Little, it's funny when you watch him play. He does have a tendency still to do what a center does, the way he goes to the middle, you know, middle of the ice, he goes deep, wow, protects the puck. So, I mean, he's a responsible
years
player.
Years upon years upon years of, that's experience, right, doing that. It's hard to train yourself to, right, to do something different.
Yeah, we still might see Little centering a line which features Perreault and Roslovic, and we still might see Kopp go back to the wing on the TLC line, right?
Are we in agreement that Hayes, Ehlers, and Connor, granted, it's only one game, they looked pretty good together last night. A lot of speed,
yep,
a lot of skill, a lot of offensive firepower in that line last night.
Well, right, and you know, the key is that line A is flourishing on the top line with Scheifele and Wheeler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, shout out to our good friend Frank Zappia, who wanted to see that for the last 2 years. And now that Line A is playing well on that top line, I don't see Maurice taking Line A off that line. So that means that Ehlers and Connor are going to be on your second line. And so it just makes sense. And yes, yesterday was a display of how much speed and skill that line has. So I don't know if that's going to stay together for the rest of the season going into the playoffs, but it looks like it is in the short term at the very least.
Why do you I mean, you can sort of read between the lines that Paul Maurice prefers Andrew Copp at center over Brian Little, based on the fact that Copp is now a centerman.
Well, I don't think it's
I wouldn't go that far.
I don't think that he prefers Andrew Copp at center over Brian Little. I think it's you have to fit all of these pieces into a puzzle, right?
Sure.
You have an extra center, essentially, if you want to look at it like that.
Well, you have...
Because you brought in Kevin Hayes, and you haven't subtracted anybody that's a center out of your top 12.
Well, you have Andrew Copp, who's played the majority of his NHL career on the wing, if you want to say that, you know, the TLC line, when they've been together for much of the last couple of years, Copp has been the winger there.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, Maurice is putting him into center and moving Little to the wing on that with Tanev and Lowry. So, I mean, I can, you know, you maybe not prefer, but I mean, today and yesterday and presumably on Sunday, he's going to prefer Little to be on a winger and Copp to be a centerman.
Well, Little ended up playing 16 minutes yesterday. I mean, you know, Hayes played 17 minutes.
Everybody on the Jets were well-balanced 1 through 12. The only forward to play less than 10 minutes last night was Jack Roslovic. Yeah. And he played something like, what, 9:15 or something?
9:18.
Okay. So, I mean, Paul Maurice, he talked about it, was able to roll all four lines last night.
Well, and that's what you want to do, right? Everybody gets fixated on which is the third line and which is the fourth line. It doesn't matter. As we know, you have to have four lines going, three good scoring lines. And, you know, the thing, guys, just quickly here, I know we're up against the break here, but when you talk about Brian Little moving to the wing on the third line as opposed to being the center on the second line, Little is such a versatile player that he can move from more of a scoring role to a checking role, because we know that that line is more of a checking line. Even though you want them to contribute offensively, you know, off of the cycle and all of that, this isn't a line that you expect to score a lot of odd man goals, right? But Little can play that role. He is a very responsible defensive forward. So it's not like we think this is a horrendous move, a catastrophic move. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about where he's the most useful, I agree with Dave. I think centering a line featuring Matty Perreault and Jack Roslovic is probably going to be more effective. And then TLC line is your fourth line. But
well, let's look at the possession numbers quickly before we have to bring in Jody Shelley to talk about the Blue Jackets. Tanev, Lowry, and Little had a Corsi 4, 5-on-5.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Save and venue adjusted at 24.81.
It's one game.
Perreault, Copp, and Roslovic at 68.28. We know that TLC is usually dominant possession-wise, so put Copp back there, you get a dominant there, and I don't think that Little replacing Copp is all of a sudden going to plummet Perreault, Little, and Roslovic's Corsi 4 percentage of their possession numbers. I mean, granted, it's one game, and you try things out, and okay, but and they won, which goes a long way. To me, it's still a little bit of a curious move, and we'll see how it plays out going forward.
I think it's pretty safe to say that Coach Maurice is still tinkering.
Fair enough. When we come back, Jody Shelley, Columbus Blue Jackets analyst, is going to join us. The Jets into Columbus tomorrow evening to face the Blue Jackets. When you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, we're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
The Jets are into Columbus tomorrow evening to face the Blue Jackets. We're pleased to be joined now by Blue Jackets analyst Jody Shelley. Jody, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, good morning. My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us, Jody. The Blue Jackets obviously have been the story in and around the NHL with their moves leading up to the trade deadline and on trade deadline day. You know, currently they are in that playoff spot, but they're battling tooth and nail, you know, for a wild card spot and in the Metropolitan Division. When you're a player in the dressing room and your general manager goes out and acquires the assets that Jarmo Kekalainen did, What impact does that have in the room? Is that an energy boost? Does it give a boost of adrenaline to players saying, hey, our general manager believes in us to this degree?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. That's exactly what it does first, is that, you know, it's a reward for the players that are in the locker room to say, all right, you guys have played well. We see what you're doing. We think we've got a crack at this. There's been a lot of noise specifically around this organization with Bobrovsky being a free agent. What's he going to do? And Panarin. And they kind of silenced that and embraced it. And I think it was it's immediate excitement. When you're in that locker room and you're, the key is that you're still there after the trades are made. You know, you're not the guy that gets shipped out because you want to be a part of something exciting. So these guys are fired up about it.
Jody, we have to ask you about Matt Duchene. I mean, the Blue Jackets made several moves, but Matt Duchene is arguably the biggest move that they made. I know he's got 4 points in his first three games with the Blue Jackets, but how does he fit in your opinion, into the lineup, into the dressing room?
He looks like he's fitting in. He's a guy that, he's actually, it's a funny story. He's sitting next to Eric Robinson, who's just played his 10th game of the season, I think 11 in his career. And Robinson had never really done any particulars with his stick. And the second day sitting next to Duchene, Duchene went back in the stick room and picked him out a different stick. And the kid, he actually used it last game. I mean, this is something you would do in the off season. But he's a guy that's very confident. He's a guy that understands the game. And he's a guy that seems to be settling in nicely. I mean, he's a veteran guy. He's a guy that's well-respected in a young locker room here. And he's making an impact. Like I just said, picking out a guy's, getting a guy to use a different stick, that's pretty, you got to be pretty confident and pretty settled in quickly to do something like that right away.
You know, Jody, Seth Jones had the game-winning goal in OT against the Flyers. He's a player in his sixth NHL season. Doesn't seem to get a lot of recognition across the NHL, but how is he impacting the Blue Jackets this season, and how much growth have you seen in his game?
Yeah, he's been really good. And the overall season, he's been great. He's a really, really smooth skating, all-star defenseman, selected for the second time. He couldn't go last year because he fell ill at the deadline or at the all-star break on the flight home and on the flight home from the last game before the break. So Werenski went for him. But he's great. He just does the right thing all the time. He's a right-handed shot, covers a lot of ice, makes, you know, when you don't have a player that can make that first pass out of the zone, get you out of the zone clean and quick, and get it on the forwards tape so they don't have to slow down to pick up a pass, when you have that, you take it for granted. And when you don't, you really miss it. And with Seth Jones, and who's so consistent, is out there, he does that every play. And he breaks up plays to actually stop plays all the time. And I think we take him for granted now, but very, very good in the defensive zone. An excellent piece up front. He got the game winner the other night, you said. He's a great guy. And more importantly, he's a super teammate for these guys. Everybody loves Seth and kind of gravitate towards him. He's got that type of personality.
Jody Shelley is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jody is a Columbus Blue Jackets analyst. The Jets and the Blue Jackets tomorrow evening in Columbus, a game you can hear, of course, live on TSN Radio 1290. You know, Jody, he was traded to the Ottawa Senators in one of the deals. Anthony Duclair was the target of a lot of vitriol or maybe a lot of criticism from Blue Jackets head coach John Tortorella almost all season long. This is a player who is undeniably talented. He's now onto his fifth NHL team. You know, you watch a guy like Duclair, and like I said, he oozes talent, but he hasn't been able to put it all together. Why do you think that is?
I think he plays the game with such speed and such skill. I coach a 10-year-old house hockey team here my son plays on. And at that level, you always have that one player that can stick handle through anyone at any given time. And I think Anthony has done that his whole life. And there's a lot of times where he doesn't use his teammates like he should. And I think that part of Torts' frustration was that he sees all the potential, all the speed, all the great skill, but he's not using it the right way in all situations for the National Hockey League. So, and he's a guy that gets so many opportunities. He doesn't finish all the time, but he generates so much offense just by backing off the D. So he's that guy that I think A, teases you sometimes with everything he's got, and B, has still not found a way to figure out how to use his teammates and play that team game out there with such that individual talent.
Jody, wanted to ask you about Adam McQuaid. Obviously, you know, he's not as sexy of a acquisition as a Matt Duchene or a Ryan Dzingel, but this is a guy who has won a Stanley Cup, 32 years old, veteran defenseman, plays that physical brand of hockey, and he's obviously not a guy that's going to put up big offensive numbers, but is that going to be an acquisition, or could it turn out to be a huge acquisition for the Blue Jackets when it comes to the playoffs, when you need those depth defensemen and you're going up against teams like Washington or Tampa Bay or Pittsburgh, and you need to have, you know, that guy with the veteran playoff experience?
Yeah, I think you said it. Experience. I think in the playoffs, a veteran, all the veterans are leaned upon so much, especially the guys who have been there and achieved that ultimate goal of winning that Stanley Cup. You know, you can talk about his play, you can talk about his physicality, you can talk about all that, but I think the most important thing he brings to the locker room is that veteran experience, and I think it cannot be understated or overstated in the playoffs. Look at the Capitals last year. Look at the Penguins the year before. It's guys that you don't think of, guys in the back end like Niskanen who has that experience, Orpik, you know, guys that just go out there and do their job. And I think that's a critical part that a lot of these teams are lacking is the veteran. Everyone's talking youth and speed, and that's excellent, and it's fun to watch. But I do think the veterans in the room, you need a good collection of guys that take things over and really take it away from the coach a little bit. Then that helps you become more of a team. And I think McQuaid, he has the potential to do that here with the Blue Jackets.
You know, Jody, you were asked about what the trades did for the atmosphere within the room, but what has it done for the fan base in Columbus? How have they reacted? Because obviously there was a lot of angst leading up to the trade deadline with what could happen, but clearly they've made a lot of moves. Now, how did the fans take it?
Well, it's done two things. A, it's fired them up. They're very excited to see that this team, we're in a sports city here. You got to think about this. The Ohio State Buckeyes, they play just down the road, about a mile and a half away from the Nationwide Arena where we're at right now for Blue Jackets hockey, and they draw 105,000 fans per game in stadium. And this town pretty much shuts down. They expect that team not to lose one game a year. with this team now, they've fired up this fan base, which is all in. But that also has increased the expectations of the fan base because, you know what, you've made all the noise at the deadline. You've grabbed national attention. You've made these moves saying Bobrovsky and Panarin are staying and we're adding. And they lost the game the other night against the Penguins, and this town was not happy. So expectations are higher, and I think the players are feeling it. So they've got to find a way to work through that and get on a bit of a roll here.
Jody, just a few more questions for you here. I wanted to also ask you about Keith Kincaid, a bit of a surprise move by the Blue Jackets, and that might have had to do with the fact that Sergei Bobrovsky is a pending UFA, and we thought that maybe he was going to be moved prior to the trade deadline. But was that move made by Jarmo Kekalainen more thinking about the future and the fact that Bobrovsky very well could test the free agent waters?
No, I think it's simply for injury. Korpisalo is a 24-year-old backup goalie who hasn't played much this season, who needs to play a little more, who has had a good start to the season, but lately he's left some soft ones get in. And you want to have goaltending depth. If you're going to add to defense two forwards and to Zingle and Duchesne, you better be ready in the back end just in case Bobrovsky goes down. So a little experience, and maybe in the next year, because I think if Bobrovsky does walk, you need a veteran guy to play 40 to 50 games while Korpisalo or whoever's going to play in that position in the future can play more of a heavy workload than he's used to at this level. I mean, he's only played 14 or 15 games a season, maybe right around 20. You've got to play more than that if you're going to be a number one. So I think it's for the now, but it also could be for the future.
Last question for you, Jody. The Eastern Conference playoff race is going to come right down to the wire, it appears. The Hurricanes, the Blue Jackets, the Penguins, they're all battling for the Metropolitan Division. And then you throw in the Canadiens with those teams for the wild card spots. From your perspective, what's going to be the determining factor that would give the Blue Jackets an edge over those other teams?
Well, I think it's their goaltending and the way they've had gone through some good experiences. I mean, this team now is one of the youngest in the National Hockey League. They got dumped by the Capitals last year after going up 2-0 and coming home and losing four straight. That stings. They've got something to prove. The determining factor to me is going to be their goaltending. I think it really is, and I think they have a goaltender in Bobrovsky who has something to prove. Listen, when you get to a point where you have something to prove only in the playoffs, it's a good thing for your career and a good thing for your organization. I think this organization has something to prove in the playoffs, but more importantly, Bobrovsky needs to improve his resume in the playoffs. So I think that is a motivated goaltender, and that is going to be a big factor and a determining factor for this team.
The Jets are into Columbus to meet the Blue Jackets tomorrow evening. Jody Shelley will be on the call as the Blue Jackets analyst. Jody, appreciate your time and insight this morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, guys.
Thanks a lot, Jody.
Anytime.
Take care, Jody. Thanks again. When we come back, more on the Jets and the Blue Jackets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
But says he can go to center or wing. Yeah, but I, Mrs. Reed, hi, this is John Tortorella. I'm in the middle of a press conference here, and you're, no, that's okay. I'd rather talk to you than your husband, I mean, your son, so, I'll be done in about 5 minutes. I've seen you call a few times, so it's rude of him not to call you back, but he's busy right now. It's nice talking to you. Okay, have a nice day.
I love John Tortorella.
Well, it's funny. There's good John Tortorella and there's bad. Like, Ezzie's experienced the bad.
Yeah.
And then there's...
I love him even more for that, though.
Yeah, no, I know.
And you know what? As the years have gone by, though, I like John Tortorella more and more, especially when you see things like that or you hear things like that. Maybe the highlight of trade deadline day.
So what happened there,
so
in case anybody hasn't seen that clip, so Tom Reed, who covers the Blue Jackets, put his cell phone on the podium, like all the reporters do, you know, to record John Tortorella's, I don't know if it was pre-game or pre-trade deadline, whatever, record the press conference.
His media availability.
And then what happened is Tom Reed's mom kept calling, and so John Tortorella eventually just answered the phone, and that was the conversation, the back and forth you heard there. Outstanding. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a game they play. It's a little levity involved every now and then. Would certainly do us all a little well. And John Tortorella was kind enough to provide that earlier this week, and with Tom Reed, the unfortunate victim, if you will.
Right, and it's extra funny because if you've been following John Tortorella over the years and you've watched, you know, the top 10 Tortorella moments on SportsCenter. Mm-hmm. He's really...
He might be up to top 20 now, I got to tell you.
Right, it might be top 50.
Where are you in that top 10?
Yeah, I don't know.
They just cut that out.
I probably don't make it. Brooksy would be 1, 2, and 3, right?
The whiplash his neck got when he looked back at you. What was that?
What kind of question is that? It was very funny. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're with you live on TSN Radio 1290. Also live tomorrow on TSN Radio 1290 will be the Jets and the Blue Jackets. The Jets make their sole visit, unless they, of course, meet in the Stanley Cup Final, to Columbus to face a Blue Jackets team that is really fighting tooth and nail atop a very crowded Metropolitan Division and a very crowded wild card spot. Should be a good game between the Jets and the Blue Jackets. The teams met about a month ago in Winnipeg, and if you recall correctly, Kyle Connor scored the game-winning goal with about a minute and a half or so to go, came off the bench, was unmarked as he entered the play, and jumped on a loose puck and wired it past, I believe it was Korpisalo, but it might have been Bobrovsky. I don't remember which exactly. Anyways, it was a good win for the Jets on home ice. The Blue Jackets will look for revenge tomorrow evening. It is a back-to-back situation for the Blue Jackets. No travel involved. They play this afternoon at home against the Oilers.
I was going to say, who are they playing, though?
They're playing the Oilers.
Make sure you state who they're playing.
So they're playing the Oilers. McDavid should be in the lineup, so it's not like they're playing the McDavidless Oilers, but they'll play the Oilers this afternoon and then face the Jets tomorrow evening. You know, this is a start of a very difficult stretch for the Winnipeg Jets. We've talked about it. Pretty much from now until the end of the regular season, they play playoff teams this entire week. Upcoming, they have the Carolina Hurricanes, currently a playoff team. They have the best team in the league, the Tampa Bay Lightning, on Tuesday night, obviously a playoff team. And they have the Washington Capitals next Sunday, a playoff team. The Jets have to keep it going. They can't have the dip that you saw after they beat Vegas last Friday against Arizona. You have to build on the victory last night, and it starts tomorrow in Columbus.
No, absolutely. And the strength of schedule has been something that folks have been talking about with the Jets now for the last week at least, leading up to knowing that they had all this series of games coming up and all these teams that are hungry. But the fact of the matter is that if you want to be a playoff team, if you want to be a Stanley Cup champion, you can't decide a minute before the playoffs begin that you're ready to kick your game into gear. So this is something that the Jets need to get up for. And, you know, look, this is a Columbus team that, like you said when we were talking to Jody Shelley, they're fighting tooth and nail. They're tied with the Pittsburgh Penguins right now, and we know the Montreal Canadiens are right there. It really seems to be a three-way race, obviously Carolina as well. So four teams for three playoff spots. That's right. So one of these teams, which is, you know, they're pretty good teams, and you know, I like those bunch of jerks out in Carolina. But the fact of the matter is that you really have to be
aware. Did you watch the celebration last night?
Oh, it was amazing.
Evander Holyfield, the real deal Evander Holyfield, yeah, is the, I guess, the star attraction in the post-game celebration. And he fought Jordan Martinuk. Is that who it was?
Yeah, Martinuk.
Yeah, fought, quote-unquote. And
knocked him out.
Knocked him out as the band of jerks continues their party in Carolina.
But the fact of the matter is that the Jets know that they're going into a game against Columbus. And obviously that Columbus is playing a back-to-back, which, like you said, Drew, they don't have to travel for. And this is a Columbus team that has been much better on the road than they have been at home. They're only three games above 500 at home, whereas they've got nine more wins on the road than they do losses. So, I mean, to me, you have to go in there and you have to play a similar game that you played against the Nashville Predators. You have to play a patient game. And that, to me, is the key to a successful franchise. I mean, you can't have, like you just touched on, dips. You have to have a consistency to your game. And so, your game has to look the same, ideally. And obviously with new players, it's going to change. And obviously without Dustin Byfuglien and Josh Morrissey, there's going to be differences. But for right now, the reality is, and we know Dustin Byfuglien's probably, I would guess, at least a week away still from returning. I can't remember the exact timeline.
Yeah, about a week, 10 days, something
right,
like that.
So you know that you don't have Dustin Byfuglien. You know that Josh Morrissey's not there till April. The fact is, this is pretty much the team you have to have, and you have to keep that consistency going as best you can. So, you know, you're going to have to bring your A game when you're playing against the Columbus team that's desperate for points.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned it's kind of weird. The Blue Jackets have been better on the road, much better on the road. One of the best road teams in the league, Dave, as you talked about. And, you know, when you bring in Matt Duchene and Ryan Dezingle, they've been playing on the second line, right? And they've had a lot of struggles with that second line because they've had Alex Wennberg on that line. We know that John Tortorella hasn't liked the way Wennberg has played at times. He's singled him out. And now you've got Oliver Bjorkstrand as the other winger on that line. We know that the top line has been the same top line all year with Panarin, Dubois, and Cam Atkinson, who's having a career year. But you've got so much depth now, I think, now that you've brought in Duchene and Dezingle, right? Because you've got Boone Jenner on that third line between Josh Anderson and Nick Foligno. Nick Foligno, not only the captain, but that good veteran kind of grinder on that line. Josh Anderson's having a very underrated year. I've mentioned him before on the show. And, you know, this is a pretty darn good defensive team. I realize Ryan Murray is out of the lineup, and we've talked about Seth Jones many times before. But I actually think Marcus Nutavera on that third pair now with Adam McQuaid, he's always been on the third pair, but if that's your third pair, Nutavera is a good, solid young defenseman, a guy that doesn't get a lot of headlines because obviously Seth Jones and Zach Werenski are the two guys that everybody talks about there. But, you know, looking at the second pair with Werenski and Savard, if you're top six defensemen, you've got Seth Jones and Scott Harrington. Ryan Murray was playing with Seth Jones before, but if your top six is Seth Jones, Harrington, Zach Werenski, David Savard, Marcus Nutavera, and Adam McQuaid, I like that group of six defensemen. And then Ryan Murray eventually comes back into the lineup. Mm-hmm. So if Columbus is matched up against whoever it is in the first round, obviously if it's going to be Tampa Bay, I probably would take the Lightning in the first round, but the fact is they've got depth now. So as we talked about with Jody Shelley, even though McQuaid might be a guy that you say, oh, you know, he's older now, he's a little bit slower, he's still a very serviceable, solid defenseman. So the Blue Jackets aren't going to be an easy test for the Jets. We know that. And now that they've added Duchene and Dezingle into the lineup, it's pushed some other guys down the lineup. Mm-hmm. And now you've got four good forward lines. So I don't think you're very excited if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning or if it's another team in the Metropolitan Division. I don't think you're going to be very excited to play the Blue Jackets in the first round because you can say whatever you want about the struggles they've had and all of the upheaval with the uncertainty about Panarin and Bobrovsky and whether they were going to be traded or not. Yeah. It's a very tough team to play against.
Right now, the first round matchup, you're absolutely right, Ezzie. It would be Tampa Bay against the Blue Jackets. Now, the Penguins are right there. Not that you want to play the Penguins much either. But, I mean, the East is certainly, it's a very difficult conference, especially the sort of bottom playoff spots. If you compare it to the Western Conference, where most people think that if you finish atop your division in the West, if you're the Flames or you're the Jets right now, you're getting a pretty easy matchup in the first round. The truth is not the same for the Eastern Conference, where there's a lot of good teams there.
What about the Islanders, right? The Islanders could win the Metro.
Yeah.
And if the Blue Jackets get that other wild card spot, you could have an Islanders Blue Jackets series.
You could if the
right. And I think that would be a big matchup problem for Barry Trotz because the Blue Jackets have a very good offensive team, especially now with the acquisitions of Duchene and Dezingle.
Well,
they're just better.
Yeah.
So That's not a good matchup. And you could say the same thing in the Western Conference. I mean, I don't think a lot of teams want to play a team like Colorado in the first round, but I think the bottom of the East is much better than the bottom of the West.
Especially around the playoff spots. Right. That's what you mean by the bottom. There's no question about it. I mean, if you're the Jets, you're entering this week of four straight Eastern Conference opponents. And I think you have to be, to some extent, excited for the opportunity. I truly believe that the Jets were, in the month of February, they, you know, I guess it's almost human. It's human to almost get a little bit bored sometimes and to get a little, and you don't want it to happen. And credit to a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning, who have basically been home and free for, since what, you know, the end of November, they've been home and free atop the Atlantic Division, and they haven't suffered any dip whatsoever. They entered that game against Boston this week having gotten points in their last 14 straight games. Same as the Bruins. It was the first time in NHL history, I believe, that two teams faced each other having earned points in their last 14 games each. The Jets suffered that dip, and they now got the victory last night against Nashville. You have to build on it. And if you have a good performance in Columbus and your game looks right, and it's a, I mean, I don't see it being anything other than a very close game between those two teams. All of a sudden, you get another opportunity on Tuesday against Tampa. And then you get an opportunity against Carolina, a team that is absolutely on fire as of late. 8-2 in their last 10, winners of 4 in a row. They're the talk of the NHL with their bunch of jerks. Then on Sunday, you go into the nation's capital down south to face the defending Stanley Cup champions. It's opportunity after opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to feel good about yourself. And that's something the Jets haven't been able to say that they've been for the last, I don't know, 3 weeks to a month. And now the opportunity strikes.
Absolutely. And, you know, going back to the Blue Jackets specifically, the playoffs are important for every team, boys, but when you're talking about the Blue Jackets, this year's playoffs are maybe more important for them than any other team. We've talked about it many times. We've talked about it with Jody Shelley, and we've talked about it with Aaron Portsline, who's covered the Blue Jackets for a long time now with The Athletic. They've never won a playoff series. Knowing that Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky are most likely going to test the free agent waters, and it's possible that Matt Duchene and Ryan Dzingel test the free agent waters.
Certainly.
It's possible they lose all four of those players, right? Mm-hmm. So it's boom or bust. It really is.
It'll be fun to watch the Jets and the Blue Jackets tomorrow evening, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. When we come back, the NHL alumni has struck a deal with a cannabis company to do some interesting examination and some interesting testing. Riley Cote, who's been at the forefront of the NHL players and CBD and THC and cannabis as a healing product, joins us next to talk about it. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.